Welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through their industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Jeffrey Wells. He is the author of three thrillers on freedom, and he has also another fourth novel, Nevertheless, and is a middle grade thriller and adventure. Welcome to the show, Jeffrey.
Thank you very much for having me, AJ.
You are welcome to the show, Jeffrey. You are welcome to India in this online form. And I'm sure not just in India, but a lot of people will understand, benefit from what we are going to talk about. We'll be talking about stories. We'll talk about curious minds. We'll talk about empowering queens to take responsibility. So, first thing to understand from you, Jeffrey, is to, for the audience, who is Jeffrey Wells? He is only an author or beyond that? Let them understand Jeffrey directly from Jeffrey himself.
Thank you. Well, I am an author. I have written three thrillers, which are a trilogy of on the concept of freedom. And then I've also written this middle grade novel. So who I am is I came to writing about 12 years ago after a career in corporate life. I was a vice president in broadcasting for two US-based television networks. And before that, I had immigrated from South Africa and came to the United States in 1980.
Right, Jeffrey. So why a book on freedom? Trilogy, now you can, it's a trilogy for freedom. All these three books, also known as, why on freedom? Why not anything else? Why freedom? Obviously, it's a very natural thing that freedom will be important. But when Jeffrey talks about it, I want to know why freedom? Why books on freedom?
Yeah. You know, the more I thought about freedom, the more I realized there are different types of freedom, and I wanted to explore each one. The first one is probably the most obvious one, which is both a postal freedom and then a freedom on a larger scale and on a national scale. And so I looked at a story that examined the culmination of a man who was enslaved really by his conscience, having helped somebody across the border during a revolution in Mozambique. And in that context, there was tremendous lack of freedom as three warring factions all fighting to get power. And through the chaos, there wasn't a whole lot of freedom going around. So that was the first type. The second type of freedom was the freedom of us as a species in the context of nature. And so I looked at the ivory trade and how it was devastating and still devastating the elephant populations in Africa. And I looked at an American composer who knew nothing about anything. You know, she all she cared about was music, until she discovered that, or the FBI discovered that, her website was being used to trade African ivory to help the warlords in Africa. And so she goes undercover, and she, through that story, the contrast between our species as being dominant and ignoring of nature contrasts with how nature should probably work. Then the third one, which was inspired by the wetlands where I live here on Long Island, is ecological in nature, and it had to do with somebody who is somebody who's been released from prison and is on parole. And so freedom is very much on her mind. And she finds out that a young boy is missing his mother, and she's a a environmental activist, and she has to go and help this boy help find his mother. And so, you know, that kind of freedom is where you know, the obvious need to try and help somebody out liberates, you know, the soul.
Right, Jeffrey. So three books on freedom, and the other totally middle grade. So help us understand, who do you write for, Jeffrey? Who is the one you are? You know, because you come from the broadcasting industry background, and into this sort of a writing. Normally, a person with that sort of an experience would go for. There is so much to write about the broadcasting industry itself.
Yeah.
You know, so I want to understand the way you think, and for whom do you want? What is it that you want to convey, and to whom?
You know, I want to convey an intellectual truth in my novels. And I really have a few people in mind that I'm writing for. I don't write for a massive collection of, you know, I don't write for a broad brush audience. So I do write for specific people. And I really wanted to get these stories out of my system. That's not to say that I wouldn't write about broadcasting. But, you know, broadcasting, since I was in it 10 years ago, has completely changed and revolutionized. Has been revolutionized by the internet. And so now, you know, YouTube is probably a bigger network than some of the major networks in the United States. So it's really changed. And I don't feel qualified to write about that, except in the context of personal stories.
Right, Jeffrey. So what about the fourth novel? You are touching here on a very different subject, and here you are talking about, you know, teens and all. Tell us a bit about that. We'll also talk about The Shadow of Doubt, award-winning animated film. We'll come to that after this.
Okay. Yeah, so Nevertheless is a middle grade novel for readers 12 years old and up, and I wanted to explore the fentanyl crisis here in the United States. And what prompted it was the town that I live in, which is a quiet farming community, really, had three fatal overdoses caused by fentanyl. And I thought to myself, you know, it's obviously tragic that those people died, but how would a 12-year-old deal with that? You know, how do they get their mind around this chemical that people feel the need to take? And so I wanted to explore that. And I wrote the novel completely from the point of view of a 12-year-old girl and a 12-year-old boy from completely diverse backgrounds, who bond through playing soccer. And they discover a tunnel, which leads to a mill, which is where the drugs are coming in, and they get involved because the girl's father is an addict. He had a car accident. He got into painkillers, and he wanted more and more painkillers, and then resorted to buying street drugs, and that's often how it goes. So her mission in life was to get her dad off drugs. And she teamed up with the boy, Pablo, and they figured out how to do that.
Right. So what impression should we get here? Because in India, we think about these things much more differently, much more pharmaceutical things have to be within the use in pharmaceuticals, not on the roads or on the streets. So what should we think? Is fentanyl a good thing or a not so good thing? How should we look at it from an outside world's perspective, or within even the US world perspective?
Yeah, so Fentanyl is an industry run by illegal cartels, basically, and it is exploited for one reason only, and that is to make money. And by exploiting people through fentanyl, they cause the death of thousands of people in the United States. Fentanyl as a chemical is, in fact, a pain reliever, and it's very similar to opioids, drugs. And it is used in the medical community in extreme cases to fight pain. However, it has been exploited and turned into a much more powerful drug. It's actually, they say, about 100 times more powerful than opioids or opium. So it's been exploited, and now it is in the hands of really evil people, and who just do not care about who they kill along the way. So bottom line is, it's a bad thing.
It's a bad thing, but in pharmaceutical use, it is an important thing.
It is.
How do you bring those things together or put separately? What is the government's role here, or has it failed then? If it's going on to the streets, how should we understand this?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, because the government has failed to take a strong position on fentanyl. They are changing that now, but it had become invasive because of powerful companies. It started with Purdue, with oxycodone, which is an opioid drug. And because they had this air of legitimacy, they were able to get into the pharmaceutical industry and into hospitals and doctors' offices, et cetera, and start getting prescribed. The rest is history. People in the Appalachian Mountains have suffered terribly over the last 20 years. There have been some great books written about it. Beth Macy wrote a wonderful book called Dope Sick. I might have gotten that title wrong, but so she examined that. I wanted to look at the kids, and how they would be affected.
Right, Jeffrey. So you want the kids, where government have failed, you want the kids to take responsibility in some way, so that they can save their own families and maybe others. I want to understand this. Why are you? They're just very twins. They're very, very young. How do you expect, through your book, them to do this difficult task?
So the way I position it with, and I just came from a school reading week before last, is that the best way to not fall victim to these drugs is to have an inner strength, which people call authenticity. However, authenticity is a word that gets thrown around, and very often you don't hear a good definition of what it actually means. And even more importantly, how do you actually become authentic? People have wide-ranging views on authenticity, and particularly young people who are influenced by people on YouTube who get millions of followers for doing a meme action, and people say, well, he was so authentic. So how do those kids deal with that? Because my theory is that when you're authentic, you have the inner strength to control your world and therefore not fall victim. And the way I do that is by starting to talk about resiliency. Kids need to be resilient, and they should not recognize that the knocks and the learning that they take when growing up is a bad thing. It's part of life, and it is something to understand going forward as they grow up. And as they become more resilient, they gain courage, basically. And the best way to deal with authenticity is to think about building a house, is what I tell them. Or in my case, building a novel, writing a novel. You know, you start with the foundation. And the foundation is the plot, you know, and then what comes next in a house, you know, the windows and the doors. Well, the windows and the doors are the characters in the novel who have to go in and come out and look through and go behind and slam, you know. So those, it's the characters that make the plot, you know, and then you go on to the other aspects like the roof and the communication infrastructure, like the plumbing and the electricity. And that all has to do with the business of writing, you know, the editing, the proofreading, the copy editing. So when those things all come together, you end up with a house. Now, a house is a structure. A home is something that you are emotionally attached to. And so if you think about building your inner home, you have the freedom to build it however you want. It could be in your bedroom, or it could be a mansion. It doesn't matter, as long as you have the sacred place in your heart, really, to figure out what you want and what you want to keep precious, including your own privacy. So that is a concept that kids can get their head around. And when I sign their books, I always say, build your inner home, because that is what I think will help them overcome the things like what they call rainbow drugs here in the United States, which are sweets that are colored and, you know, nice bright colors that have fentanyl in them, because the drug industry is trying to get those kids addicted to pay more and more money, and many of them are dying of overdose.
Right. I'm just thinking about all these things. We are leaving our kids to fight a difficult battle alone. What is the role of parents and the society here? Do we expect anything happening from there? And the ironical part is that, you know, we on one side are the kids, and the other side we have the leaders. Both the prominent ones have both been, you know, in power one time or the other. And we are looking towards a future, which is, again, they are trying to go through TikTok and all those mediums, yeah, reaching out the same teens, not for different, for something, some different sort of a messaging, but for the political sort of a messaging. I want to understand, you talk about resilience with such sort of a mindset. How do our kids continue to have that sort of a resilience? This is a difficult time. Everybody is coming for their money. They are coming for their brains, the industry, the government, for a lot. How do you see this part? How do the kids fight this battle alone? Do they have any support from anywhere?
Well, they certainly have support from their educators, you know, from teachers and counselors, and of course hopefully their parents and guardians, you know, grandparents, etc. But the way they deal with their resilience is to break it down and ask themselves, is this the first time that this is happening to me? That's the fundamental question. If it is the first time, then I need to recognize it for what it is and try and work through it as best I can. Sometimes you win doing that. Sometimes you fail. And that's okay, because there's always going to be a second time. In life, it's not, you know, either or, and that's it, and you're done. It's you keep trying, you know, keep keeping trying is building resilience. And so I tell them about my own resilience, you know, how I grew up and what I had to face, and the challenge, some of the challenges that I had as an adult as well. You know, it never ends. You don't just build resilience when you're 12. You build it until the day you die, basically. There's always a first time for everything. And as you get older, of course, it potentially gets more tragic. And there's a way of dealing with the tragic resilience as well that pertains more to people like my age. But for them, the first times are happening every single day. Their minds are expanding. They're curious. They love stories. And they're going to interpret them however they want. And along the way, they're going to take lessons from those stories. So one of the concrete examples that I use that come out of the book when I'm teaching is the concept of, I'm making a fist here, the glove of light. If you can imagine a fist and around it is this halo of light, it is a concept where the character in my book explains that a glove, a fist in the light is able to direct and do things and help you, and it's attached. But in the dark, you know, it doesn't know what it's doing. You still have the power, but you're pushing and you're shoving and you're fighting, and it's not going anywhere. And so the glove of light is empowering. And so empowerment becomes important, and it's something that they can remember, that I need to respect the light. And when we do that, we respect people around us as well. So it encourages an inclusive society where we do recognize other people from other cultures and genders and ethnicities and all the rest of it. That's empowerment.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tell us a bit about your award-winning animation film, The Shadow of Doubt. What is this? Yeah, is the theme different here or something related to the earlier two?
No, it's a different theme. The theme of this short film is about really the theme is about coming back from a previous career. In her case, she's a jazz singer, and she fell out of favor, and she sort of forgot about it and decided at some point to go back to where the bar where she got her break. You know, she was on the stage, and the shadow of doubt is that inner voice that tells you you're not good enough. And she confronts the ghost of the shadow of doubt in the and goes on stage and performs her song. And it's a story of reconciliation, really.
Right. So shadow of doubt is only at the end a shadow of doubt. It's not your reality.
Well, I mean, those themes are especially for writers. You know, that insecurity about, you know, is my story good enough? You know, and what am I doing? And, you know, why am I spending thousands of hours writing these words when I really don't know if it's going to resonate? Those are insecurities that are very common and very true for a lot of writers, including myself. So it never really goes away. So the theme is still relevant.
Right. So after, you know, several books, four books, one movie, one film, and so much of work in broadcasting and so many other things, how do you see? Are you very positive towards every our world around, or is it or is it not so good times in the future, or is it the teens are the actual will be the actual answers for our future, and everything present will all get wiped out, all negative things will get wiped out?
Yeah, well, I am an optimist by nature, so I do believe that things will work out. However, I also believe that things don't work out by themselves. You have to actively take and participate in the change you want to make. And so, that's important. And I believe that in a concept that is nevertheless, which I call sacred hope. That's not a religious concept. That is, when hope is coupled with action, it becomes sacred, and sacred should be respected and listened to and acted on. And so the way I do that is, the boy's mother, the boy is a Latino boy, his mother's name is Sanchia Esperanza. Well, Esperanza means hope, and Sanchia means sacred to her. And so he always remembers his mother's name, Sacred Hope. And so it's not enough just to hope or believe. Action is what counts, but you have to keep a positive attitude.
Absolutely. There is much to learn from you, Jeffrey, through you, through your books, and all that you are. And I'm sure a lot of people would like to, know you more, learn about your books, read your books. So what is the best way for them to connect with you?
So all of the information about me and my books and where to buy them is on my website. And you can see my name on the screen. It's Jeffrey Wells, one word, and then add the word fiction, FICTION. So it's jeffreywellsfiction.com. And that'll take you to my website, where you can read about my biography. You can read about podcasts like I'm on now with AJ. Yeah, you can read about the detail of every single book that I've written, and the blogging that I do. I write essays on these wide-ranging concepts that we've been talking about. So I very much appreciate you you having me on your show.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. With this, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KAJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.